Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Saturday to all of you. We hope that all of you also had a wonderful Christmas yesterday and continue to open presents and spend time with your family. We are not here today. This is a past moment, but we got a lot of cool things that we're going to bring you today. So, first of all, we do want to say hello to everybody out there on the East Coast and Delmarva Radio. Thank you so much for joining us this holiday weekend. For those of you who recently followed us, thank you for being part of our family. We do appreciate it. It's been one tremendous year for all of us, the hardships and everything that we've all gone through, but we have gone through them together, and we pray that the next year will be better for all of us. Don't forget, you can interact with the show by commenting on our website, yourweeklydose.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1. And find us on Facebook at Your Weekly Dose, or email us if you like at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can also download the show for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. You can also subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, don't forget to rate and review the show. Today's theme and song, of course, is The First Noel by the great Kenny G. Such a beautiful arrangement of that. And as always, any music that we play here on the show, you can always purchase through our main sponsor, which is Amazon. All you need to do is go to our website and click on the Amazon banner and bookmark it and then shop to your heart's delight. Well, today, guys, we are going to bring you two special plays that Mark and Brian did. The first one is going to be A Christmas Carol starring the great Mel Brooks. And the second is Ted Likas' personal favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy both radio dramas, A Christmas Carol, and It's a Wonderful Life. Take it away, guys.
Good morning and welcome to a Mark and Brian family and friends Christmas Carol, our version of Mr. Charles Dickens' classic.
This morning, our cast of characters are Mel Brooks as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Bah, humbug.
Frank Sontag as Bob Cratchit.
I'm the luckiest man in the world having such a fine family.
Rita Wild as the ghost of Christmas past.
Look down, Ebenezer, and look back to your youth.
Engineer Gary Greth as the ghost of Christmas present.
Have you ever seen the likes of me?
Mark and Brian as the ghost of Christmas future.
I will show you shadows of the things that have not happened.
Special effects guy.
Scott the Skylord as Scrooge's nephew, Fred.
Christmas a humbug.
Lynn Meek as the gentleman solicitor.
How much shall I put you down for, Mr. Scrooge?
Todd is the ghost of Marley.
This is your last chance to escape my miserable fate.
Switchboarder Laura as Scrooge's fiancée, Belle.
you hold money more important than me, or anything else for that matter.
Anthony is Scrooge's brother Peter.
I've come to bring you home, dear brother Ebenezer.
Newswoman Lori Howell as Mrs. Cratchit.
Mr. Scrooge, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give a piece of my mind.
Dominique, will you take this call as Cratchit's daughter, Martha?
These days, Father walks slower than he used to.
Long Paul as Joe and Randy Moran's as Man.
You're not going to take his things, are you?
Oh, why not? He won't miss them.
All right. Remy as Tiny Tim.
God bless us, everyone.
Production Master Stu will be all of the bystanders.
What has he done with his money?
And we, Mark and Bri, will be the children and your host. And now, A Christmas Carol.
It is the afternoon before Christmas Day in the year of our Lord, 1844. Despite the bitterly cold weather, all London is in a very festive mood.
Stop it! Stop it, I say! Away from here with all that noise! We'll have no singing round here, do you understand? No singing, I say!
A Merry Christmas, sir.
No need to wish him a Merry Christmas. That's old Scrooge.
Yes, that's old Scrooge, all right. Ebenezer Scrooge. And there's no sign of happiness or festivity on his lined face. He closes the door and returns to his office. He looks around, glowers at his clerk, Bob Cratchit, snorts as he sees Cratchit bent over his desk hard at work, and he adjusts his spectacles and turns without warning. The door opens.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Bah! Bah, humbug!
Christmas a humbug? Why, surely you don't mean that, Uncle.
Merry Christmas, indeed. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Yes, but what right have you to be dismal? You're rich enough.
Well, what's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? If I had my way, every idiot who goes about with a Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. You keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
No, leave me alone, damn it. Much good it's done you.
I've always thought of Christmas as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, and I say God bless it.
Amen.
Cratchit, let me hear another sound from you, and you'll lose your Christmas, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Don't be angry, Uncle. I came here only to ask you to spend Christmas Day with Peg and me.
Now, certainly not be off.
We want nothing from you, Uncle, other than your company for Christmas Day. Won't you change your mind and have dinner with us?
You know my sentiments on Christmas. Good day, Fred.
Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year to you.
Bah, humbug. Get out.
Pardon me, Mr. Scrooge.
What is it?
There's a gentleman here to see you.
What about, Cratchit?
He didn't say, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. I have the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley.
Mr. Marley, my former partner, has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
Then I have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
What do you want?
At this festive season, Mr. Scrooge, we try to make some slight provisions for the poor and destitute. Many thousands are out there just needing some common necessities.
Where are you from? Texas? Anyway, listen. Common necessities. Are there no prisons?
Oh, there's plenty of prisons.
And workhouses. Are they still in operation?
I wish I could say there were not. How much do you want to put down, Mr. Scrooge?
Exactly nothing.
Oh, you wish to be anonymous, Mr. Scrooge?
I wish to be left alone. Let these deserving people of yours go to the establishments I have mentioned.
Most of them would rather die than do that, Mr. Scrooge.
Then let them do that and help decrease the surplus population. I'm busy. Good afternoon to you, Tex.
Very good, Mr. Scrooge. Goodbye, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry everything and good riddance. Charity.
Now, Mr. Scrooge, sir.
What is it, Cratchit?
I was
You
wondering...
were wondering if you could go home, right?
Yes, sir. It is getting late.
Yes. Go on. You'll want the whole day off tomorrow, I suppose.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
Well, it's not convenient, and it's not fair.
It's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th day of December. I suppose you must have the whole day. But be here earlier the next. Understand?
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas.
Ah, bah, humbug.
A few minutes later, Scrooge leaves his office and makes his way to his melancholy chambers, a gloomy suite of rooms. By the light of a single flickering candle, he eats a cold supper, and then, to save lighting his stove, Ebenezer Scrooge retires for the night.
The minutes tick away. Scrooge sleeps uneasily, tossing from side to side, and then awakes with a start to a loud, panting sound.
Who are you? Who are you? What do you want? Who are you? Answer me.
Ask me who I was.
You are... You can't be.
Yes, in life I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
But it cannot be so. You're dead.
You don't believe in me?
No. You're nothing but an undigested bit of beef, a lot of mustard, crumb of cheese.
You are wrong, Ebenezer. I'm the ghost of Jacob Marley.
Why do you come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him has should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if the spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death.
You've had a couple, haven't you, Marley? No. I don't believe it.
It is then doomed to wander through the world.
You are chained, Jacob. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it by link, yard by yard. I wore it of my own free will. It's the pattern strange to you.
Jacob, you're vomiting on yourself. I don't chain. What's this chain? I don't understand.
This chain I wear is heavy as the one you are now forging.
You mean forging, don't you, Jacob? You talk strangely, Jacob.
Hey, the noises coming out of your body are pretty strange, too, Ebenezer. For 7 years, I've been dead, traveling the whole time.
7 years dead and traveling all the time? Oh, you must have covered a lot of territory.
No rest, no peace, only remorse.
Only what?
Remorse.
Remorse, okay, I got it. But you were always such a good man of business.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, all were my business. But I needed none of these. Instead, I thought only of money.
And what is wrong with making money?
That is your weakness, Ebenezer, as it was mine.
Don't breathe in my face.
That is why I am here tonight. Part of the reason for my penance, I'm here to warn you, to help you escape my fate. You have only one chance left, Ebenezer.
And tell me, foul breath, tell me how this chance will come.
My time draws near. I must go. Tonight you'll be haunted by three spirits. I certainly have had a lot.
Don't break me up, Marley. Is that the chance you mentioned, Jacob? I think I'd rather not.
The first will appear when the bell strikes one. Strike one! Except the second at the stroke of two. Strike two! Yeah. And the third is the bell strike three. He's out.
Is Molly allowed to ad-lib so much? Never mind. Yeah. Back to Scrooge. Couldn't they all come at once and have it over with?
No, and hate them well when they appear. Remember, it is your last chance to escape my miserable fate.
See ya, Gabby. Narrator.
As Scrooge stares in frightened silence, the wraith-like figure of his deceased partner Marley recedes into space. Then, exhausted by the ordeal, Scrooge drops off to sleep. In the distance, the steeple clock is heard striking one.
The curtains of Scrooge's bed are drawn aside, as if by invisible hands. Suddenly, there stands by the bed a strange figure with white hair, holding a sprig of fresh green holly. Scrooge stares and then speaks.
Are you the spirit whose coming was told me by Jacob Marley?
I am?
Yes. Yeah.
I am the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Ebenezer. Rise and walk with me.
Where?
Out through the window.
What? We are three stories above the ground. I am only mortal.
Bear but a touch of my hand upon your heart, and you shall be upheld in more than
my
this.
My heart. Yes, okay. Where? What are we to do?
I'm going to help redeem you, maybe. Come walk with me out into the night, into the past.
Into the past.
The wind howls as the ghost and Scrooge walk off into the night. Scrooge is trembling with fright.
Tell me, ghost of Christmas past, where are we?
Look down, Ebenezer, and think back. Think back to your youth.
Why, of course, the river, the meadow. And that's the old school where I went as a lad. But there is no one about.
It's the Christmas holiday. Look into the study hall.
Empty. Empty except for a young boy sitting at a desk, his head in his hands, left behind. Ah, he's crying, poor chap. No place to go at Christmas. Ah, now he's looking up.
Do you recognize him?
Why, it's me.
Mm-hmm. Come, let us look back on another Christmas 1 year later.
The wind howls again as they move ahead in time to take a closer look at the young Ebenezer Scrooge.
Why, there's the school again. And there's a boy pacing up and down in the schoolyard. I wonder who...
Do you recognize him?
Yes. I see it as myself as a boy. A coach is coming up the roadway. Now it has stopped. And a little boy gets out. Look, he's hugging me. It's my brother Peter.
Listen to what he says to you.
I've come to bring you home, dear brother Ebenezer. Father's not mean anymore, and he says you're never coming back here. And from now on, we'll always be together. Just think, we're together for the first time in 4 years.
Your brother was such a frail creature, so kind, so soft-hearted.
So he was. So he was. He died so young.
And left a son.
Yes, yes, Fred, my nephew.
He came to wish you a Merry Christmas yesterday.
Turning page. Yes, yes, he did. He did. Please take me back.
No, not yet. There is one more spirit for you to see.
No more, please. I do not wish to see it.
You must. Several years have passed. In the house below, there sits a young, beautiful girl.
It's Belle.
The girl you were to marry. And there you sit next to her, a young man in your prime. Only now, your face begins to show the signs of avarice. There is a greedy, restless motion in your eyes. Listen to what she is saying to you, Ebenezer.
It matters very little to you, Ebenezer. Another idol has displaced me, a golden one. You hold money more important than me, or anything else for that matter. And I'm going to grant your wish, free you from marrying me. That is what you desire, Ebenezer. I feel sorry for you.
Oh, spirit, show me no more.
Today, Belle is a happy woman, surrounded by her fine children. Those children might have been yours if you hadn't been so selfish.
I tried, but she wouldn't. Never mind. Take me back. Take me back, I beg of you.
Scrooge had seen enough of the past, and his pleas to be returned to the present are heard. The steeple clock strikes twice.
And Scrooge finds himself back in his bedroom. Slowly his door, though bolted, swings open.
Good morning, Ebenezer. I am the ghost of Christmas Present. Look upon me.
You're practically a giant. Yet you have a young face.
Have you ever seen the likes of me before?
No, never.
I have many brothers, over 1,800 of them. One for each Christmas since the very first.
Tremendous family to provide for.
Touch my robe, Ebenezer, and come forth with me. I trust you'll profit by your journey. We have little time, and there is a place we must visit. It's a very poor house in a very poor section of London. This one here, directly below us.
Indeed, it is. Who, may I ask, lives here?
An underpaid clerk named Bob Cratchit.
The Bob Cratchit that works for me?
The very same.
That woman, those children.
His wife and family.
Oh, that's Cratchit. That's himself coming up the stairs now. He's carrying a young boy.
His youngest child, Tiny Tim.
The child carries a crutch.
It's because he's crippled.
But the doctors?
Cratchit cannot afford a doctor. Not on 15 shillings a week.
But...
Listen.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And a most Merry Christmas.
Oh, Father, Tiny Tim. Merry Christmas. Welcome, Tiny Tim. Sit next to me. Father, let me take your muffler. And how did Tiny Tim behave at the church?
As good as gold and better.
I was glad to be able to go to church. That's because I wanted the people to see I was a cripple.
Now, that's a peculiar thing to say, Tiny Tim.
I think it is.
No, it isn't. That's because I was in God's house, and it was God who made the blind able to see and the lame able to walk. And when the people at church saw me in my crutch, I was hoping they would think of what God can do, and they would say a prayer for me.
Mm. Oh, I'm certain they did pray for you.
And one of these days, I'm going to get well, and that'll mean I can throw away this crutch and run and play like the other boys.
You will, Tim, one of these days. And now, Mother, the big question. When will dinner be ready?
Oh, it's ready now. Just about the finest goose you've ever seen. Martha, you carry it in. Tom, you fetch the potatoes and turnips. Dick, set the chairs around the table.
And I'll sit between Mother and Father.
This is going to be the best Christmas dinner anyone could hope for. I'm the luckiest man in the world having such a fine family.
It isn't a very big goose, is it? I could eat the whole bird myself, I believe.
It's all that Bob Cratchit can afford. His family doesn't complain, though. To them, that meager goose is a sumptuous banquet. But more important, much, much more important, Ebenezer.
Yes?
They are happy and united as a family. Look at their shining faces. Listen to them.
What a superb dinner we have had. The tempting meat, the delicious dressing.
And the plum pudding, Father. Don't forget that.
That pudding was the greatest success achieved by Mrs. Cratchit since her marriage.
Oh, thank you for the compliment. I must admit, it was good.
And now for the crowning touch, the punch.
Oh, the punch.
The punch.
Oh, the punch.
Wonderful. Here we are. Get your glasses. So the member of the Cratchit family... Clink glasses in a Christmas toast.
Can you take that?
Why not?
Go ahead.
Yours. I'm getting carried away. First, to the founder of this feast, the man who has made it possible, I give you Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, Mr. Scrooge, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I'd hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, remember, this is Christmas Day.
He's a hard, stingy, unfeeling man. You know he is, Robert. You know better than anyone.
My dear, remember Christmas Day.
I'm sorry. Very well. I'll drink to his health. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas to him. To Mr. Scrooge.
To Mr. Scrooge!
And now a toast to us. A Merry Christmas to us all. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
Oh, Spirit, tell me, will Tiny Tim live?
I see a vacant seat in the chimney corner. And a crutch without an owner. Carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No. No, oh no, kind spirit. Say that he will live, that he will be spared.
Why concern yourself with him? Isn't it better that he die and decrease the surplus population?
Oh, but these poor people must be helped.
Are there no prisons and the workhouses? Are they still in operation?
Oh, spirit, do not...
Come, come. It's time to go.
I wish to remain.
I can remain no longer. Touch my robe, Ebenezer, and we shall go.
What's with the touching your robe all the time?
The wind begins to howl again, and Ebenezer Scrooge shortly finds himself standing outside his lodging.
A heavy snow is falling. Good to be in the lounging. A heavy snow is falling, blanketing a sleeping London. There is a steeple bell. It is still early Christmas morning.
Ebenezer. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Who are you guys? I mean, you are the third and last spirit.
I am the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
And you're in stereo.
Yes, Ebenezer.
You are about to show me shadows of things that have not yet happened, but will happen in time before us. Is that so, spirits?
Yes, Ebenezer. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, I fear. Get it together, spirit. Yes. Oh, I fear what I am about to see.
But Scrooge's fear met nothing to the ghost. And as the wind rose up, they ventured into the night once again.
Why do we stop here on the street corner, spirit?
Those people standing there, do you know them?
Yes, I do business with them.
Their conversation is interesting.
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
I thought he'd never die.
What has he done with his money?
I haven't heard. Left it to his company, perhaps. Well, one thing is certain. He didn't leave it to charity.
Are you going to his funeral?
Not unless a free lunch is provided.
A very good point. I can't say that I blame you.
Spirit. This dead man they were discussing, who is he?
I will show you. Come into this room with me. There is a bed in front of you. On it lies a man. That is, the body of a man. The one those gentlemen on the street were talking about.
And no one has come to claim his body?
No one. For he left not a friend behind him.
Oh, wait a minute, one at a time. Oh, never mind.
Come closer. And look into his face.
No. I would if I could, but I haven't the power.
Then follow me, Ebenezer Scrooge, to yet another scene.
Look here, Joe. Here's our chance. You're not going to take his things, are you?
Oh, why not? He won't miss him.
Not a dead man.
No, I suppose not.
Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did. Now open that bundle, Joe, and tell me what the value of it.
What do you call this, bed curtains?
Oh, bed curtains. Don't drop that oil upon the blankets now.
His blankets?
Who else's? He isn't likely to be gold without them, I dare say.
Oh, spirit, let me see some tenderness connected with death. If I don't, that lonely body in the dark room will ever haunt me.
Yes, I know of such a home. One where there is tenderness connected with death. Over here, on the poor street, and in this dismal house.
But this house, why, yes, I've been here before. Bob Cratchit, my clerk, lives here. There's Mrs. Cratchit and her oldest daughter, Martha.
Your eyes, Mother, you'll strain them working in this bad light.
Oh, I'll stop for a while. I wouldn't want to show red, tired eyes to your father when he comes home. It's time he was here.
Past it, rather. But these days, he walks slower than he used to, Mother.
I have known him to walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed. He was very light to carry, and your father loved him so. It was no trouble. There's someone at the door, Martha. It must be your father.
I'll let him in. Hello, Father. You look tired.
You are late tonight, Robert.
Yes, I am late.
I'll get some tea for you.
Thank you, Martha.
You went to the grave today?
Yes, I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it was.
Well, I'll see it soon.
I promised him I would walk there every Sunday, my poor Tiny Tim. At last, he is rid of his crutch.
Yes, at last, our poor Tiny Tim.
Scrooge turned from the Cratchit family with an anguished cry.
Oh, tell me, Spirit, why did Tiny Tim have to die?
Come, there is still another place to visit. When you see the next place I am taking you out, perhaps you will understand.
Yeah, I'll understand. If we talk closer together, I'll understand. Tell me, is this a graveyard? Why do we stop here?
Look at the tombstone. Read the name on it.
Before I do, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be?
Read the inscription on the tombstone.
It reads, Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, no, Spirit, no. Hear me. I'm not the man I was. I will not be like the man you have just shown me. I will honor Christmas.
Are you certain of this?
Oh, yes. I will try to keep it alive all year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. I will not shut out the lesson that all three spirits have taught me. Oh, tell me there is hope that I may rub away the writing on this stone.
We shall soon see.
Tell me, is there hope that I may rub away the writing? What am I holding on to? It's the bedpost. I'm in my own bed. Home. Those bells. It must be Christmas. I wonder if it really is.
Then Scrooge ran to the window, and as he did, the sound of church bells filled the room.
You boy down there.
Yes, sir. Did you call me?
What day is it today, lad?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day.
And to think the spirits have done it all in one night.
What did you say, sir?
Well, never mind. Do you know the poulter is on the next street?
I should say so.
Oh, an intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was in the window?
What, the one as big as me?
Yes, oh, what a delightful boy. Yes, the one as big as you.
It's hanging there now, sir.
Go and buy it. I am in earnest. Here's the money. Catch, deliver it to Bob Cratchit on Golden Street in Camden Town.
But, sir, there will be considerable change left over.
Oh, keep it, lad.
Thank you, sir.
Don't let Mrs. Cratchit know who sent the turkey. It's a surprise. And, lad?
Yes, sir?
A very Merry Christmas to you.
This was just the first of many good things that Scrooge would do for people this Christmas Day. Filled with good cheer and blessed with the Christmas spirit, he set out to make up for all the years that he had neglected.
Bless my soul, Uncle.
Yes, it is, Fred. Your Uncle Scrooge. I've come for Christmas dinner. Now let me in. I have a present for your good wife, and from now on I'm going to be one of your most persistent guests. I've changed, my boy. You'll see.
The next morning, Scrooge arrived at his office before his usual time to await Bob Cratchit's arrival.
He's late. The day after Christmas, Bob Cratchit's late for work. And here he comes. Well, now, Cratchit, what do you mean by coming in so late this morning?
I'm very sorry, Mr. Scrooge. I beg your pardon, I'm sure. I know I'm a few minutes late.
18 and a half, to be precise. Step this way, Cratchit, if you please. Now, I'm not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer. And so, I'm about to raise your salary.
Mr. Scrooge!
A Merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas than I have given you in a long year. I shall raise your salary and do all I can to help you and your family, especially Tiny Tim. Now, make up the fire. Buy another scuttle of coal before you dot another I.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did everything he promised and infinitely more. He became a regular visitor to his nephew's home and even took Fred into business with him. He raised Bob Cratchit's salary to a figure that left the bewildered gentleman gasping. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father.
He provided doctors for the little lad, and very soon Tiny Tim will have his wish, and he will be able to throw away his crutch and run and play like the other boys. As for the three spirits, Ebenezer Scrooge never saw them again. That was due to the unchangeable fact that Scrooge, for the rest of his days, helped keep alive the spirit of Christmas.
And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Is there music?
Oh, yeah. There's the music. Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't have the Christmas spirit before, but...
We are quickly going to take a break, good and job. Then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Mel Brooks a bit more. Mel, yeah.
Great job.
Yeah, oh, my
it
God.
It was great. It was wonderful. Oh. You guys were terrific. And how did you get Frau Blucher into Christmas?
All right, we'll be back. Right, Don't go away. Mark and Brian, Mel Brooks here.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Claudia Christian, Dana Delaney, Jess Harnell, Gary Marshall, Joe Mantegna, Judd Nelson, Kevin Pollak, and Mark and Brian in It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life is a drama of a typical American. It might be you, it might be me. He dreams of glory, he lives in hope. He loves and doubts, and only Providence puts a final value on his service to humanity. Our story starts before the war, when life was normal. This is the story of George Bailey, citizen of Bedford Falls, New York. George Bailey, who, more than anything under the sun, wanted to see the world. The wonderful, exciting world that lay somewhere beyond the limits of his hometown. Oddly enough, this story does not begin in Bedford Falls. In fact, it doesn't begin anywhere in this world. It begins in heaven, where the superintendent of angels has just summoned an apprentice angel named Clarence.
I'm really going down to Earth, sir? Oh, how splendid.
Yes, yes, there's a very discouraged man down there, Clarence, George Bailey. At exactly 10:45 p.m. Earth time, he'll be thinking seriously of ending his life.
Oh, dear, dear, his life.
Yes. Now, I want you to stop him if you can. Now, sit down, sit down. I'll give you Bailey's case history.
Sir, if I could... should accomplish my mission, may I perhaps get my wings? You know, I've been waiting over 200 years now. And, well, people are beginning to talk, you know.
Yes, I know. Clarence, what's that book you have there?
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, sir. I was reading it when you sent for me.
Ah, a fine book. Well, you do a good job on George Bailey, and we'll see about your wing.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Now, listen. When George Bailey was a boy, two events occurred that you should keep in mind. One was when his younger brother Harry fell through the ice and almost drowned. George saved him.
Mm-hmm. Brother fell through the ice. George saved him.
That's good. Ever since then, George has had a bad ear, all that icy water, and you understand.
Yeah, water, yeah. Bad ear. Yes, sir.
The other event came a few months later. George used to work after school in Mr. Gower's drugstore, and one day, Mr. Gower's only son died of influenza. It was a terrible blow, and poor Mr. Gower tried to lose his grief in whiskey.
George! Where have you been, George? Mrs. Blake called twice. What happened to that prescription? You lost it, didn't you?
No, Mr. Gower. Here it is.
You good for nothing? Don't you know that Blake girl's sick?
Mr. Gower, my ear. You're hurting my sore ear.
I'll teach you to loaf, you lazy brat!
Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something bad in those capsules.
Shut up!
I know you feel bad, but look, Mr. Gower, look. This bottle. You use this bottle to make up the capsules. It's poison.
Poison?
Yeah. Don't hurt my sore ear again, Mr. Gower.
Oh, no. No, George... I'm sorry.
Well, I'll never tell, Mr. Gower. I promise. I'll never tell.
Well, Clarence, that was George Bailey as a boy. When he grew up, he wanted to go to college, but there just wasn't any money. So he worked 4 years in the Building and Loan Association.
Building and Loan Association?
I forgot to tell you. George's father and Uncle Billy were in the building and loan business. High ideals and a low bank account. Anyway, George worked for his father and saved enough to see himself through the university. That summer, though, he was going to Europe. Got a job on a cattle boat. do a little traveling before college.
Boy, oh boy, it's hard to realize it's my last night in the Bailey boarding house.
Yeah, we're sure gonna miss you, George.
I'm gonna miss you too, Pop. Hey, what's the matter? You look tired.
I had another tussle with old man Potter today.
I thought when you put him on the board of directors, he'd ease up.
So did I.
I just can't understand a man like Mr. Potter. He can't begin to spend all his money.
I think Potter owns about everything he wants in Bedford Falls except our small building and loan. I think that's why he hates us so much.
Hey, George, can I borrow your tuxedo studs?
Yeah, help yourself, Harry.
Well, what are they, in your suitcase?
No, I'm not taking a tuxedo on a cattle boat, you know.
Say, where'd you get that suitcase anyway?
Oh, Mr. Gower gave it to me, a going-away present. And one of these days, you're going to see that bag all covered with travel labels. Italy and Baghdad and Samarkand.
Gonna have a pretty full summer, hey?
I'm gonna have a pretty full life.
Hey, why don't you come to the dance tonight?
What, and be bored to death?
Well, you couldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls. Hey, I gotta run.
You know what, I wish we could send Harry to college with you, George.
Well, I thought we'd got that all figured out now, Pop. He'll take over my job at the building and loan and work 4 years like I did. Then he'll go to school.
He's pretty young for that job, George.
Well, no younger than I was.
Yeah, but you know what? You were born older. George, when you get out of college, I don't suppose you'd think about coming back to the building and loan, would you?
Pop, I just couldn't. I couldn't face being cooped up the rest of my life in a shabby little office. I'm sorry, Pop. No, I didn't mean that, but it's just this business of nickels and dimes. I'd go crazy. I want to do something big, something different.
Well, you know, George, in a small way, I think we are doing something important. In that shabby little office, we help people figure out how they can own their own home.
I know, Pop. I just feel like if I didn't get away, I'd bust.
I understand, and you're right. You know what? Get yourself an education and get out of here.
You know, Pop, I think you're a pretty great guy.
Thank you, George. I'm glad to hear you say that. Look, you know what? Why don't you get over to Harry's dance? You'll have a good time.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I will drop in. Yeah, maybe I will at that.
So George Bailey went to the dance. Is that important, Joseph?
Why, it's at the dance he met Mary Hatch.
Oh, Mary Hatch.
And 3 hours later, he was walking her home. George and Mary were feeling pretty good, Clarence. As a matter of fact, they were feeling wonderful.
Buffalo gal, can't you come out tonight?
Come out tonight.
Buffalo gal, can't you come out tonight?
And dance by the light of the moon.
Hot dog! Oh boy, just like an organ.
Beautiful, at least.
You know something? If it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest girl in town.
Well, why don't you say it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I will. How old are you anyway?
18.
18?
Too young or too old?
No. It's just right. It sort of suits you. Hey, look where we are.
Oh, it's the old Granville house.
Yeah, I gotta throw a rock.
Oh, no, George, no. I love that old house.
Don't you know about deserted houses? You make a wish and then throw a rock.
Oh, George, but it was such a lovely old place. I want to live there someday.
In there? I wouldn't live in it as a ghost. Now watch this. Here we go. How about that, huh? Pretty good shot, huh? Broke a window, huh?
What'd you wish for, George?
Oh, I don't know. Not just one wish. A whole hatful. Mary, I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. And then I'm coming back here and going to go to college and see what they know, and then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields and skyscrapers 100 stories high and bridges a mile long, and then I'm going to... Hey, Mary... What is it you want? What do you want, huh? You want the moon? All you've got to do is just say the word and it's yours.
Okay, the moon. I'll take it. Then what?
Then what? Well, then you could swallow it and it would dissolve like an aspirin, you know, and the moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and the ends of your hair and then, you think I'm talking too much?
Yes, you're talking too much! Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
How's that?
You know what? Youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. Hey, you come back here. I'll show you some kissing if you want to.
George!
Hey, Uncle Billy, look here. I'm going to kiss Mary. Just watch.
George, get in the car quick. Your father's had a stroke.
What?
George, get in the car!
What was that?
George, get in! Hurry!
I'm sorry, Mary. I gotta go.
Well, Clarence, George's father died that night, so of course George didn't go to Europe. But that fall, just as he was ready to leave for college, the directors of the building and loan had a meeting. They were going to appoint a successor to Peter Bailey.
Wait a minute, what was that you said, Mr. Clarence?
I said, as long as Peter Bailey's dead, let's dissolve the building and loan. We don't need it.
Okay, all right. Hang on, wait a minute, just wait a minute.
No, you wait a minute. Peter Bailey was not a businessman. Ideals without common sense could ruin a town. What do we get? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
Hold on, Mr. Potter.
I meant no disrespect, George.
Now, wait a minute here. Why my father ever started this cheap penny ante building and loan, I'll never know. But just remember this, Mr. Potter. This rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and the paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and play and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him. But to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, Mr. Potter, my father died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
Well, I'm not talking about your book, George. I'm talking about the building and loan.
You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on. That's what you're talking about. Well, this town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can borrow a few dollars without crawling to you. Come on, Uncle Billy.
What happened, George?
Boy, oh boy, you should have heard, George.
Yeah, well, meanwhile, they're in there voting us out of business.
Well, who cares? I can get another job. After all, I'm only 41.
45? Will you get out of here, George? You missed your boat trip. You want to miss college, too?
George! We voted Potter down. We're still in business.
Whoopee! We're still in business! We're still in business!
But wait.
There's one condition, George. They've appointed you to take your father's place.
Appoint me? But I'm going to college. Look, this is my last chance. Uncle Billy's your man.
No, George. You've got to take it. They'll vote with Potter otherwise.
I know. George Bailey didn't go to college.
That's right, Clarence. He gave his college money to his younger brother, Harry. Harry went instead.
Uh-huh. But what happened to that good-looking girl? You know, Mary?
Oh, George saw her now and then. Not very often, though, because Mary went away to school. Anyway, George waited 4 years for Harry to come back and take over the building and loan. He could still see the world. He planned to work in the oil fields in Venezuela. Except when Harry came home, he wasn't alone. There was a girl with him. His wife.
George?
Yeah, I'm out here on the porch, Mother. I just thought I'd get some air.
Well, how do you like your new sister-in-law?
Oh, she's swell.
Well, sure looks like she can keep Harry on his toes.
Yeah, and keep him out of Bedford Falls anyway.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Ruth's father got a wonderful job waiting for Harry up in Buffalo.
Buffalo? Well, that means you...
Yeah.
Oh, George, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Did you know Mary Hatch is back from school?
Yeah, I heard something like that.
Oh, she's such a nice girl, that Mary.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, stop grumping.
What do you mean?
Give me one good reason why you shouldn't give Mary a call.
Well, Sam Wainwright, for one. Sam's crazy about Mary.
Well, she's not crazy about him.
Well, how do you know that? Did she discuss it with you?
Besides, Sam's away in New York.
Oh, and all's fair in love and war, I see. Okay, Mother, I think I'll go out and find that girl and do a little passionate necking.
Oh, George.
Bye, Mrs. Bailey. By the way, do you want any books at the library?
Library? George, you go and see Mary, do you hear?
George, is that you out there?
Oh, hello, Mary.
Well, are you coming in?
Oh, I just happened to be passing by.
And... Oh, I thought you were picketing. Have you made up your mind?
How's that?
Have you made up your mind?
About what?
About coming in. Your mother just phoned. She said you were coming over.
My mother just phoned? Now, what does she mean by calling? I mean, I just happened to be passing by, that's all.
Well, are you coming in?
Well, all right. I guess I'll come in for a minute. But I didn't tell anybody I was coming here. You know, a fella can't go out for a walk nowadays without... Well, when did you get back from college?
Tuesday.
Hmm. Well, where'd you get that dress?
You like it?
Oh, yeah. It's all right. I still can't understand how my mother called. I didn't tell anyone that I was coming here.
Would you rather leave?
Well, no. I don't want to be rude. I'll sit down for a while.
It's nice about your brother and Ruth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all right.
Don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach. She's swell.
Oh, just marriage in general you're not enthusiastic about, hmm?
No, marriage is all right for a lot of people. It's all right for Harry, Sam Wainwright, and you.
For Sam?
Mary, who's down there?
It's George Bailey, Mother.
What's he want?
I don't know. What do you want?
Not a thing. I just came in to get warm.
He's making violent, passionate love to me, Mother.
Well, you just tell him to go right back home. Sam's calling you tonight from New York, isn't he?
I guess so. Would you like to hear some music?
Yeah, sure. You know, your mother need... I didn't come here to,
What did you come here for, then?
I don't know. You're supposed to be the one with all the answers. You tell me.
Oh, why don't you go home?
Well, I will. I don't know why I came here in the first place. Good night.
Mary!
The way you're shouting, you'd think...
Think what?
Mary! Mary!
All right, I'll get it. George, on your way out, would you mind turning off the phone?
Well, I'd be very happy. It's a doggone crazy song anyway.
Hello? Sam?
Mary? Gee, it's good to hear your voice.
Oh, Sam, I was just talking with an old friend of yours. George Bailey's here.
Well, put him on. I'd love to talk to him, too.
Wait a second. George, Sam wants to talk to you.
He doesn't want to speak to George.
He does so. He asked for him.
Why'd you call me? Because if you're... I gotta...
Sam wants to talk to you.
Hiya, Sam.
Hey, pal. Hey, what are you trying to do? Steal my girl?
Hey, what do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal anybody's girl. Here, Mary, take the phone.
No. George, wait. I want to talk to you. Tell Mary to get on the extension upstairs.
He says for you to get on the extension upstairs.
I can't. Mother's on the extension.
I am not!
We can both hear, George. Just put your head a little closer. We're listening, Sam.
Well, listen. I got this big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. Georgie, you remember that time you told me about making plastic out of soybeans?
Soybeans? Oh, yeah. Soybeans, I remember.
Well, look, my father checked into it, George, and now he's going to put up a factory. How do you like that?
A factory, huh?
Yeah. And here's the point, George. I may have a job for you unless you're still married to that broken-down building and loan, eh, Mary?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, listen, you tell that guy I'm giving him the chance of a lifetime. Do you hear me? Tell it.
George, he says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Give me that phone.
Here's George again, Sam. George?
Now, you listen to me, Mary. I don't want any plastics, and I don't want any job, and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. Do you understand that? I want to do what I want to do, and you're not going to trick me, and you're... Mary. Oh, Mary, darling.
Oh, George.
I love you, Mary.
George.
Well. So, George Bailey and Mary Hatch were,
Yes, George and Mary were married, and they started off their honeymoon in Ernie Bishop's taxicab.
Hey, so, where you two going on this here, honeymoon, eh?
We're gonna shoot the works, Ernie, a whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotel, the oldest champagne, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
So you're finally getting out of bed for balls. Well, what then, George?
After that, who cares?
Hey, you know what, Mrs. Bailey? I haven't kissed you in at least 10 minutes.
Hey, George, look over there at the bank. There's something funny going on. If I were a bed man, I'd say it looks like a run.
Well, wait. Pull over a minute, will we, Ernie?
George, let's not stop, please. Let's go straight to the station.
No, wait a minute. I'd better see what it is. I'll be right back.
George, please, George!
Thank you.
Well, we're back in heaven again, where the superintendent of angels is reviewing the case history of a mortal named George Bailey. Clarence, the apprentice angel, is very eager to depart on his mission to the earth.
Okay, poor George Bailey. I mean, he's certainly in desperate trouble, Joseph. I should go to him at once.
Now you sit down, Clarence. Sit down. We're nowhere near the point where George Bailey's thinking of taking his life.
We're not?
No. Now, where were we? Yes. George and Mary had just started out on their honeymoon when they ran smack into the financial panic of 1932. In the waiting room with the building and loan, 100 frantic people were clamoring for their savings.
Hey, what's going on, Uncle Billy? What's happened? What are all these people doing out here?
We're in a real pickle, George. All I know is the bank called our loan an hour ago. I had to hand over all our cash.
Holy mackerel.
The whole town's going crazy. Bank's in the same spot we are.
Our charter says we have to stay open until 6 p.m., and the state can take away our license if we don't.
Well, how can we stay open until 6 without any money? George, where are you going?
I gotta go out and talk to those people. Come on.
Hey, how about our money, George? Where's our money?
Wait a minute. Now listen to me. Now you're thinking of this place all wrong. Your money's not here. Now let me tell you. No, listen. Let me tell you. Your money's in people's houses. In the Kennedy house, in the McLaren house, and in your house, and 100 others. Now what are you going to do? Foreclose on them?
I got $240 in shares. Now let me have it.
All right, Charlie. Now you'll get your money in 60 days.
60 days?
Now, look. That's what you agreed on when you bought your shares.
I got my money. Yeah, old man Potter's taking over the bank. He'll pay you 50 cents on every dollar.
Now, wait a minute. Please, folks. I beg of you not to do this. If Potter gets hold of your shares, he'll be owning this building and loan. He's got the bank, he's got the bus line, he's got the department stores, and now he's after us because he wants to keep you living in his shacks and paying the kind of rent he decides to charge. Now we can get through this thing all right, but we've got to stick together. We've got to have faith in each other.
My husband's out of work. We need money.
I've got doctor bills to pay.
I can't feed my kids on food.
Excuse me, George. We still got some money. How much do you need?
Hey, now, wait a minute. Folks, listen. I've got $2,000. All right, Charlie, how much do you need?
$240, George.
Oh, Charlie, now listen. Just enough to tide you over.
I said $240.
Oh, okay. Okay, Uncle Billy, give Charlie $240. All right, Ed, now, how much do you need just to get by?
Well, $20, I suppose.
Now you're talking. Now, Mrs. Thompson, how about you?
$20 will do me.
Good. $20. Okay, now, just pay it back when you can. Okay, who's next?
Look at the clock! Look!
5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3, 2, 1.
Six!
Oh, 6 o'clock, we made it! Lock that door, Uncle Billy, quick! Boy, we're still in business, Uncle Billy. We've even got $2 left.
Hello? Bailey Brothers? George, there's a call for you.
Okay, and then call my wife, will you? She's probably over at Mother's.
Mrs. Bailey's on the line.
Well, I don't want Mrs. Bailey. I want my wife, Mrs. Bailey. Oh, that's my wife, yeah. Give me the phone, will you? Hey, Mary? Mary, listen, Mary. I'm sorry. Come home? Well, what home? 323 Sycamore. Well, whose home is that? What? Well, Mary, how can I? Well, sure, all right. Yeah, oh, okay, I'll be right there.
Clarence, guess what 323 Sycamore was?
His mother-in-law's house.
No!
Oh.
Number 323 Sycamore was the old Granville house, the one George threw rocks at and made wishes. Yes, sir, that's where they spent their honeymoon. That's where they set up house. They were still living there 2 years later when old man Potter asked George to stop off at his office.
Sit down, George. Sit down. Have a cigar?
Well, thank you, sir.
Now, George, you're a young man. married, making, say, $40 a week at the building and loan?
45.
45. Now, if you were some ordinary yokel, I'd say you were doing pretty fine. George Bailey is intelligent, ambitious. He hates the building and loan almost as much as I do. He's been dying to get out of town ever since he was born, but he's trapped. Trapped into flirting his way, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Now, do I paint a correct picture here, George, or do I exaggerate?
Well, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point is, George, you're the only man in town that stood up to me. George, I want to hire you to manage my affairs. I'll start you off at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year? Are you sure you're talking to me? I'm George Bailey, don't you remember me? The building and loan, remember?
Yes, George Bailey, whose ship has just come in, providing he has the sense to climb aboard.
But what about the building and loan?
Confound it, man! I'm offering you a 3-year contract, $20,000 a year. Is it a deal or isn't it?
No. No, the answer's no. Doggone it, if you offer me $1 million to stay around this town and play stooge to you, the answer would still be no. Now let me alone. Don't bother me.
George, I've been waiting up for you. What did Mr. Potter want?
Oh, it's nothing. He just talked and talked. It's nothing. Oh, gee, Mary Hatch. Mary, why in the world did you ever marry a guy like me anyway?
To keep from being an old maid.
Oh, I was going to see the world. I was going to build things. I was going to give you the moon. What have I given you? What have I given you? Not even a new dress, not for months. Ah, gee whiz, Mary, I feel awful.
So do I. Mornings especially.
Why, you could have married Sam Wainwright, anybody else in town.
I didn't want to marry anybody else. I want my baby to look like you.
No, you didn't even have a honeymoon, and I promised you that you... What?
My baby.
Mary, you mean you're sitting on the nest?
Well, Mary had her baby, Clarence, a boy.
You don't say.
Then she had another one, a girl.
Mary Hatch did. Well, what do you know with George?
And night after night, George would come home late from the office. Things weren't good with the building and loan. Potter was really bearing down on him. Then came the war. Mary had another baby by then.
Oh, they were very busy, George.
Yes. Yes, but she still had time to help out in USO. Uncle Billy sold war bonds. And George's brother Harry became a real hero. Shot down 15 enemy planes.
15? But George, what about George?
Well, George was 4F on account of his bad ear. He was an air raid warden. On VE Day, he wept and prayed. On VJ Day, he wept and prayed again.
We're getting pretty close to today, aren't we, sir?
Yes, Clarence. You now know almost everything you have to know about George Bailey, except what happened that finds him down there at this moment wanting to die.
Well, sir, well.
Well, today's the day before Christmas, on Earth time, of course. George is pretty excited.
Hey, Cousin Tilly, Eustace, hey, look at the newspaper. Commander Harry Bailey decorated by the president. That's my kid brother receiving the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, it's wonderful, George.
What do you think about that? He shot down 15 planes, and the last one he got was just about to dive into a transport loaded with soldiers. You know what that means? He saved lives, hundreds of lives. Hey, where's Uncle Billy, huh?
He's gone to the bank, George. He's depositing that $8,000.
Good, good. Who's that in his office there?
It's that man again, the bank examiner.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah, well, good afternoon, Mr. Carter. Hey, Tilly, get the books for Mr. Carter, will you, and let me know when Uncle Billy gets back. You know, that's my brother's picture there, Mr. Carter. He shot down 15 planes, and one of them...
Well, well, Mr. Henry T. Potter, come to the bank to deposit some more loot, huh?
Ah, you old fool.
Hey, how do you like the news in the paper, Mr. Potter? Just can't keep those Bailey boys down now, can ya?
What's that? Let me see that newspaper.
Here. Sorry I can't chat, you old thief. I gotta make a deposit. Here you are, Horace. A very Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Bailey. Say, haven't you forgotten something there?
Horace, I've been forgetting things my whole life. Get wiggle on, boy!
But, Mr. Bailey, where's the money?
What's that?
Well, you know, if you want to make a deposit, it's customary to bring the money with you, sir.
It's gone. It's gone! Where did I put it? Where did I put that money?
Terrible thing, Clarence. Just terrible. Uncle Billy couldn't find the money because the envelope with the $8,000 was folded up in that newspaper he gave to Old Man Potter.
I just don't know what happened to it, George. I just don't know.
$8,000? Uncle Billy, the bank examiner's here and it's not our money. It belongs to the depositors.
George, what are we going to do? I've traced every step I took. Oh, what are we going to do?
Are you sure you didn't put that envelope in your coat pocket?
I think so. Maybe. Oh, I'm no good to you, George. I'm no good.
Now listen to me. Think, will you now? Try and think.
I can't think anymore. I can't.
Where's that money, you silly old fool? You know what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. One of us is going to jail. Well, it's not going to be me. Now get out of my way. I'm going home.
George, dear, what's wrong? You haven't said a word since you came home.
What's all that banging on that piano? Do you have to just keep playing that same piece over and over and over again?
Daddy, I have to practice for the Christmas party.
Dear, what is it? Another hectic day?
Yeah, another red-letter day for the Baileys.
Hey, Dad, the Murphy's got a brand new car. You should see it.
Oh, really? What's the matter with our car? Isn't it good enough for you?
No, I'm sorry, Dad. I haven't...
Petey, run upstairs. See if Zuzu's all right.
Oh, okay, Mom.
What do you mean if Zuzu's all right? What do you mean by that?
Oh, she caught a little cold coming home from school. She didn't button up her coat. The doctor said it was nothing.
The doctor? Was the doctor here? It's this old drafty house. It's a wonder we don't all have pneumonia. Might as well be living in a refrigerator. Oh, why do we have to live here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town?
George, what's happened?
Oh, everything's happened. You call this a happy family? Oh, why do we have to have all these kids?
Dad, how do you spell frankincense?
I don't know how you... Oh, why don't you ask your mother?
Hello? Oh, thank you, Mrs. Welsh. I'm sure she'll be all right.
Who's that?
It's Zuzu's school teacher. What? Oh, yes, the doctor says she'll be fine tomorrow.
Here, give me that phone.
George, please.
Mrs. Walsh? Well, this is Zuzu's father. Say, what kind of teacher are you anyway? What do you mean sending Zuzu home like that half-naked? Do you realize she'll probably end up with pneumonia just because of your stupidity? Now, maybe my kids aren't the best-dressed kids in town, but at least... Hello? Hello? Jane, will you stop playing that lousy piano? Now cut it out. Stop it.
George, for heaven's sake, what's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mary, I've just got to get out of here.
So, that's it, is it, George? You're short $8,000 in your account.
No, please, Mr. Potter. I'll pay any sort of a bonus on the loan. If you still want the building and loan, I...
You say you've lost it. Have you notified the police?
No, sir, I haven't done that yet.
Why come to me? What about your friend, Sam Wainwright?
Well, I can't get hold of him. He's in Europe.
What kind of security would you have, George? What collateral?
Well, I have some life insurance, a $15,000 policy.
Mm-hmm. What's your equity in this, George?
$500.
And you want $8,000? George, you once called me a warped, frustrated old man. Well, what are you but a warped, frustrated young man crawling on your hands and knees for help? Why don't you go back to that riffraff you love so well? Ask them for help.
I'll do anything, Mr. Potter. Please. Please help me, Mr. My wife and kids.
I'm calling the district attorney. $500. You know something, George? You're worth more dead than you are alive. Now get out of here.
Get out!
Imagine, Clarence, all the time Potter had the $8,000 in his desk drawer. It's still there, Clarence.
That's terrible, Joseph. Sir, but where is George, sir?
Well, he went over to Martini's Cafe. He's had a couple of drinks, Clarence. He's just standing there, sort of in a daze. And this is where you come in.
Oh, God. Oh, God, dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, please show me the way. I'm at the end of my rope. Show me the way, God.
Mr. Bailey, you all right? Please don't drink no more, Mr. Bailey, please. You don't feel good.
Bailey? Did you say Bailey? Which Bailey?
This gentleman right here is Mr. Bailey, George Bailey.
George Bailey, huh? And the next time you talk to my wife like that, you'll get worse. It isn't enough she slaves teaching your stupid kids how to read and write. You've got to call her up and insult her.
You get out of here, Mr. Welsh, or you hit my best friend. Now get out.
All right.
Mr. Bailey, you okay?
Who was that?
Well, that was Mr. Welsh. But don't worry. He don't come back to this place no more. I'll get something for your face. It's bleeding.
Oh, I'm all right.
No, please. Don't go away, Mr. Bailey.
Just
stay.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Well, George left Martini's Cafe 5 minutes ago, Clarence. He's out at the river now on the bridge, looking out over the water. Are you ready, Clarence?
All ready, sir.
Very well. Save George Bailey's life and you'll get your wings.
My wings!
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. George! George Bailey! Get away from that bridge! You hear me, George? George!
Numb with despair, convinced, as Mr. Potter said, that he's worth more dead than alive, George Bailey stands on a bridge, staring at the dark and frigid waters below. Suddenly, there's a splash.
Help! Help! I'm drowning here! Help! Help!
No, that's not George. It's Clarence, the apprentice angel. And there goes George in after him. It's a few minutes later now, and in the bridge keeper's shack, George and Clarence are drying off.
You both sure you're all right? You know, it's kind of cold to be swimming. You want a doctor?
No, I'm all right, I'm all right.
Oh, I'm fine. This underwear, though, I didn't have time to change into anything more stylish. My wife gave me this on my last birthday. I passed away in it.
You what, mister?
I see Tom Sawyer's drying out, too.
Who?
My book. I left in such a hurry, I brought Tom Sawyer with me.
How'd you happen to fall in?
Oh, I jumped in. I jumped in to save you, George.
You were gonna save me?
Well, I did, didn't I? You didn't go through with it, did you?
Go through with what?
Suicide.
Hey, it's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Against the law where I come from, too.
Where do you come from?
Heaven.
Oh, that's very funny.
Your lip's bleeding, George.
Yeah, I got a bust in the jaw in answer to a prayer.
Oh, no, George. I'm the answer to your prayer.
Hey, how'd you know my name?
Oh, I know all about you.
Well, who are you anyway?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
Clarence Oddbody? What's the AS2 for?
Angel Second Class.
Hey, I'm getting out of here.
Cheerio, my good man.
Now look here, well, why'd you want to save me?
Because I am your guardian angel, George.
Oh, I see, uh-huh. Well, you look like about the kind of an angel I'd get. Well, What happened to your wings?
I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel second class.
Oh, I see.
But you can help me earn them, George, by letting me help you.
Oh, you don't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you, do you?
Oh, no. We don't use money in heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting. Well, it comes in pretty handy down here, bub. Of course, I found it out a little late. You know, I'm worth more dead than alive.
Oh, come on. You mustn't talk like that. I'll never get me my wings if you keep feeling that way. You just don't realize what you've done for your folks. Why, if it hadn't been for you...
Hey, if it hadn't been for me, everybody would be better off. My wife and my kids and my friends.
Oh, this is not going to be easy.
They'd all be better off if I hadn't been born.
What? What did you just say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
George, that's wonderful.
That's wonderful? What are you talking about?
The idea you just gave me. Well, you got your wish. You've never been born.
I've never been born?
Exactly. No worries, no $8,000 to get, nothing. You simply do not exist.
All right.
George, I can do these things, strange things. I can show you the world, George, the way it would be if you hadn't been born.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute, this ear of mine. Say something else in that bad ear.
You don't have a bad ear anymore. Oh, I don't think you're concentrating. Don't you see? You're not the George Bailey you think you are. You're nobody.
Well, that's the doggonedest thing I ever... This ear...
Your lips stop bleeding, too.
Yeah. Hey, what's happening around here? What is this, anyway? Oh, I need a drink. That's what I need. What about you, Angel? You want a drink?
Well, I don't quite know.
Look, let's get dressed and we'll stroll over to Martini's and then, excuse me, I mean, I'll stroll, you fly.
Oh, no, I can't. I don't have my wings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't have your wings yet, huh? That's right, I forgot that again. Yeah, a couple of drinks and we'll both be flying, huh?
What do you have, fellas?
Hey, Nick. Where's the boss? Where's Martini?
Luke Wise guy. I'm the boss, see?
Okay, well, give me a double scotch, will you?
And what's yours?
You know what I just love? Some mulled wine.
Huh?
Mulled wine. Heavy on the cinnamon and light on the cloves. Off with you, my lad, and lively now.
You trying to be funny, pal?
Oh, come on here. Just give him the same as I ordered. He's okay.
Okay, two double scotches come right up.
What about this place? It's all changed.
All of Bedford Falls has changed, George. You're having your wish. You've never been born. Oh, there'll be lots of things you've never seen before. Oh, good. Somebody just made it.
Made what?
Every time a bell rings, it means some angel's got his wings.
What'd you say?
Look, Clarence, I don't think you'd better talk about angels around here.
Don't they believe in angels?
Oh, yeah, they believe in them, but, you know, it's just a little...
Well, then you should... Why should people be surprised when they see one?
Hey, don't mind him, Nick. He's just a little fella. He just never grew up. How old are you anyway, Clarence?
Well, next May I'll be 293.
That does it. A couple of pixies, huh? Go on, get out of here. Y'all hear me get.
Where's Martini? Will you call him?
And stop asking about Martini. He ain't here and he... Hey, you rummy, didn't I tell you never come panhandling around here?
Hey, it's Mr. Gower. Mr. Gower, don't you know me? This is George Bailey.
Hey, you buy me a drink? Just give me one drink, mister.
Hey, Banky, throw the rummy out.
Oh, no, please don't throw...
Hey, Nick, that's Mr. Gower, the druggist.
That rumhead spent 20 years in jail for poisoning some kid. Now, if you know him, you must be a jailbird yourself. Binky, here's two more. Get him out of here.
Get up, George. Good thing he threw us in a snowbank.
No, where's... What happened to Mr. Gower?
Mr. Gower doesn't know you, George. You see, you weren't there to stop him from putting poison into that prescription.
You mean I wasn't there? Look, now tell me, what are you? Are you a hypnotist?
George.
Look, why am I seeing all these strange things?
Don't you understand? You gotta listen. It's because you were not born.
Well, if I wasn't born, then who am I?
Nobody. You have no identity.
What do you mean I have no identity?
No papers, no driver's license, no 4F card, no insurance policy.
Zuzu's bell.
What?
Zuzu's bell. I bought my little girl a bell to hang on the Christmas tree, and I forgot to give it to her. I've got it in my... It's gone. It's gone, too. Everything is gone.
But you've been given a great gift, George. A chance to see what the world would be like if you'd never been born.
Oh, you're crazy. You're crazy as a bedbug, and you're driving me crazy, too. Now, look, I'm going home to my wife and family. Do you understand that? And I'm going home alone.
When we left, George had just been given his wish of having never been born. Not sure of what was happening, he decided to go home, alone.
Now, Clarence, you better stay with George. Keep following him.
Oh, I'll stay near him, sir. Poor George, he's seeing Main Street now. The way it would be if he hadn't lived there. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't lived at all. The thing that's really shocked them, sir, is the building and loan office.
Mm.
You want to know what's there now?
Mm.
A pawn shop.
A pawn shop? What's he doing now, Clarence?
Oh, what's he doing? He's talking to Ernie Bishop, the taxi driver. He wants to go home.
You better stay close to him, Clarence. He's going to need you.
Oh, I will, sir. I will.
Come on, step on it, Ernie. Get me home. I'm off my nut.
Okay, okay. Where do you live, buddy?
Oh, now, doggone it, Ernie. Don't you start pulling that stuff on me. 323 Sycamore Street.
323 Sycamore?
Yeah, now hurry up for Zuzu's sake.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, buddy, okay.
Hey, look, Ernie, I don't know what's happened. I'm going crazy here. Maybe I got some bad liquor. Now, look, tell me this now. You're Ernie Bishop, right? And you live with your wife and kids down on...
Whoa. You seen my wife.
Oh, come on. Of course I've seen your wife. I've been in your house 100 times. We built it for you, didn't we?
Whoa. What are you talking about? My wife took the kids and ran away 5 years ago. And I ain't never seen you before, not once in my whole entire life.
Okay, Ernie, okay. Just step on it. Get me home. Mary, where are you? Janie, Petey, Zuzu, where are you?
This is just an old abandoned house, George. You have no wife, no children.
Where are they? What have you done with them?
There, Bert, I told you he was...
All right, up with your hands.
Oh, Bert the cop, thank heaven you're here.
Now look, why don't you be a good fella and I'll take you to a doctor.
Bert, listen to me, please.
I hate to use my nightstick.
What's the matter with you guys? No, listen, it's that fella there. He says he's an angel. He's got me in some type of spell.
I hate to use my nightstick, but I guess I'll have to. Ow, that hurts.
Run, George. George, run. He can't hit you while I'm biting him.
Get off of me.
George, run. My teeth aren't what they used to be. Joseph.
Where'd he go, Ernie? Where'd he go?
I don't know. He just disappeared.
Clarence?
Joseph, I hope you don't mind my calling on you like I did.
It was very irregular, Clarence. You're by yourself again. Where's George?
He's at his mother's house, sir.
Well, if George hasn't been born, he has no mother.
Oh, he's being very stubborn, sir. He'll just have to find these things out for himself.
But his mother, that's a terrible, bitter blow for a man. His own mother not knowing him.
You mean I shouldn't have let him?
I mean you'd better find him right away.
Oh, and stop biting policemen, Clarence.
I'm here again, George.
Clarence, my mother. My own mother didn't know me. Oh, if only Harry were only back from Washington.
George, there is no Harry. Your brother fell through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
Well, that's a lie. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Mm. Every man on that transport died. Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry. Don't you see, George? You really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it all away?
Where's Mary, Clarence? Please, where's my wife? Tell me where she is.
I'm not supposed to tell you, George. You're not going to like it.
Where is she? I'll choke it out of you if you have to. Where's my wife?
Okay. The library. She works there. She's just about to lock up for the night. So listen. George, come back. Oh, there must be some easier way for me to get my wings.
Mary!
I'm sorry. The library's closed.
Mary! It's George. Don't you know me?
No, I don't know you. Let me go!
Mary, please, don't do this to me. Mary, please help me. Help me. Where are our kids? Mary, I need you, Mary. Please.
Get away from me! Help! Help!
Help me!
Help!
Help me, Mary. Don't you recognize me? I'm George!
Clarence?
Oh, where is he, Joseph? Where's George? I'm afraid I lost him, sir.
You know, you shouldn't have let him try to see Mary. Now, they're after him. They think he was trying to hurt her.
Joseph, I won't even get one wing, will I?
You have one more chance, Clarence. Get over to the bridge by the river. I think George has just about seen enough.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. Thank you so much, Joseph.
Clarence, where are you?
I'm here, George.
Help me, Clarence. Get me back. I don't care what happens to me. Only get me back to my wife and kids, please. I want to live again.
Oh, thank you, George. Thank you, Lord.
I want to live again, please. Oh, God, please let me live again.
George? Is that you down there, George?
Get out of here, Bert. Get out of here. You come any closer and I'll let you have it.
What the Sam hell are you yelling for, George?
Come up. Bert? Bert, do you know me?
Know ya? I've been looking all over town for you. Where you been?
Hey, Bert. Bert, I'm alive again, Bert.
You sure you're all right? Hey, your mouth's bleeding.
It is? Hey, my mouth's bleeding. Hey, Bert, look at it. Look at the blood come out of there, would you? Hey, where's Zuzu's Christmas bell, Bert? I had it right in my pocket. Here it is. Hey, it's in my pocket. What do you know about that? Hey, Merry Christmas, Bert.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. Now get in the car. I'll drive you home.
You will, Bert? We'll do that. And turn the siren wide open. Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls. Hey, Merry Christmas, you old building alone. Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. Yippee! Hey, Bert, come on in with me, will you? Well, what is it? These people, these reporters. Well, Merry Christmas, reporters. Hey, Mr. Bank Examiner, Merry Christmas.
Yes, Mr. Bailey, sir. There seems to be a deficit.
I know, Mr. Carter. $8,000, I'll bet, right?
Yes. George, I've got a warrant here. I'm sorry, but I've got to...
I'll bet it's a warrant for my arrest, isn't it? Now, isn't that wonderful? Merry Christmas. Hey, where's Mary? Oh, look at this wonderful old drafty house. Isn't it... Hey, have you seen my wife? Where's Mary? Mary! Where's the kids? Zuzu, Petey, Janie?
Daddy! Merry Christmas, Dad.
Hey, kids. Oh, Janie, Petey, I could eat you all up. Where's your mother?
Oh, she went looking for you, Dad, with Uncle Billy.
Daddy,
Zuzu, my little ginger snap, how do you feel, huh?
I'm fine, Daddy. Not a stitch of temperature.
Not a stitch of temperature. Hallelujah.
George, darling.
It's Mommy. Mommy's home.
Oh, Mary.
George, where have you been? Oh, George.
Oh, Mary. Now, look. Oh, Mary. Just let me touch you. Ah, you're real, Mary. You have no idea what happened to me.
You have no idea what's happened either. They're on their way here.
Who's on their way? Oh, the police department, the FBI, the National Guard, I'm alive again, Mary. Hey, listen, Mary. I'm alive again.
Yes, darling, yes. Now just close your eyes and come on downstairs.
Well, what is it? Can I open my eyes yet? Oh, Mary, what's going on? Can I open my eyes?
Now, just keep your eyes closed. I'm just going to walk you over here by the Christmas tree.
The people. I hear lots of people. What is it?
Just 1 minute. We're all ready, Uncle Billy. Come in, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, George!
George, look! Just look!
Uncle Billy!
Money, George! A laundry basket filled with money! Money for you! Mary did it! George! Mary!
I don't understand. What money? What?
When your friends heard that you were in trouble, darling, they started up a collection. This money is for you, George. It's the $8,000.
Charlie, hey, there's Martini, Mr. Gower. Hey, how are you, Mr. Gower? Mrs. Thompson, Ed, Tom, everybody?
Hey, none of us would have a roof over our heads if it wasn't for you, George.
Gosh, this is wonderful. Hey, Mary, look who's coming in. Mother, hi, Mother. Hey, and Harry.
Got Mary's telegram, George. I flew in as fast as I could.
Hey, everybody, how about a toast, eh?
Good idea, Ernie. A toast to my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
Forget? Hey, here, honey. Here's your bell.
Thanks, Daddy.
Darling, what is this on the table here? This book.
Oh, dear. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
There's something written in it.
Dear George, remember, no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings. Love, Clarence.
Who's Clarence?
Well, he's a very dear friend of mine.
Daddy, my teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right, Zuzu. That's right. Attaboy, Clarence! Attaboy, Clarence! Happy landing!
Heard a Lux Radio Theater adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life on the Mark and Brian program. This broadcast was produced and directed by Ted Lakus, assisted by Christina Knapp, Elizabeth Hahn, and Priva Fleischman. Technical director Steve Cormier. Engineer Rick Cutler. Thanks to Audio Specialties. Live Foley and sound effects by Sound Deluxe Entertainment. Glenn Morgan, Brian Solano, Lina Granala, Becky Allen, Shelley Smith, Angela Catanzaro, Dan Kerr, Ken Steiger, Gavin Hogg, Annette Nussbaum, Lon Bender, Jimmy Moriana, Wiley Stateman. Visit their website at www.sounddeluxe.com. Musical director, Mary Opperman. Music composed by John Hoover. Orchestra conducted by Tom Mazur. This broadcast was brought to you by Chevrolet. We'll be there. A special thanks to Starbucks Coffee, Kelly Gates, and the Museum of Television and Radio here in Beverly Hills. Charles Michelson, John, and Larry Gassman. If you'd like to get a copy of the original Lux Radio version of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed or other Lux Radio productions, call Radio Spirits at 800-723-4648. Thank you for listening. And here now are the marvelous Mark and Brian!
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Was that cool or what? All right, tell you
how
what.
How many got piloerections during that last bit, man? Goosebumps. That was goosebumps.
Again, we want to thank everybody for joining us today in the replay of Mark and Brian's A Christmas Carol starring Mel Brooks. And, of course, the ever-so-popular Ted Likas produced and directed It's a Wonderful Life. Once again, guys, we want to thank you for joining us this year. As we all know, it's been an incredibly rough year for all of us in various ways, whether we're a restaurant worker, whether we're a musician, whether we're a grocery bagger, whatever it may be. Some of us have lost our jobs. Many of us are privileged to keep our jobs and stay working and provide for our families. Others, we're having it a lot tougher, and we're trying to stead the course. But know that we will get through all of this together. We just need to rely on each other. Have faith and hope that things will get better. In the meantime, guys, we hope that all of you had a wonderful Christmas. And on behalf of Steve Silva, Amber Ash McCary, producer Zach, and intern Christopher, and myself, Sean Roberts, we hope that all of you have a wonderful, wonderful new year. Please stay safe. Please cover up. Please protect one another. And we'll make 2021 a much, much better year. Until then, God bless, and we'll see you guys January 9th.
To this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.